Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jared Chaffett.
Along with Artemis Brower.
We're back this week with episode 18, y'all. So glad to be back in the studio.
Absolutely.
Cooking up one of these new episodes for y'all. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we love to do, and I think this is going to be a fun episode. We had a great interview with a new friend of the podcast, Haley Alden.
Yep.
Already looking at that interview, how was that for you? What did you take out of it?
Phenomenal interview. Learned a lot about, you know, her experience traveling across the country and working with different teams, especially within the American Conference, and her experience yep. working with those 12 different teams in the American, and, you know, which one she preferred and how she kind of helped grow the American Athletic Conference, you know, studio and media, you know, group. So very, very good interview, and really enjoyed spending my time and on this Sunday afternoon with Haley.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Learned a lot about her experiences, and we just had a blast. Mm-hmm. I can't say it enough. We had some technical difficulties while recording it, but
yeah,
it was a fun interview that we had, and I hope that all of you will enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you will. So, Artie, just real quick, doing some housekeeping. Just wanted to see how have you been since we last recorded.
Been real good, man. I went down to South Carolina this weekend and met up with one of my fraternity brothers, our pledge brother, friend of the podcast, also Kyle Manick. Want to, you know, thank his family for showing me some great hospitality down there in North Myrtle Beach. Did better this weekend on the links. I shot a 96. So anytime I shoot under 100.
So was that on the front or back nine?
I shot a 96 overall. So.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I thought you were talking about the front nine.
No. I'm talking about a full 18, baby. Full 18.
Oh, wow, okay.
So that actually might be my best score ever, to be honest with you. And it was a very hard course. It's the die course.
Okay, yeah.
At Barefoot Landing. So it was a very hard course, but very beautiful. And that's kind of how my weekend went. So how about you?
Yeah, so... Mine, interesting weekend. We went back down to the beach,
mm-hmm.
back to Emerald Isle.
Good old Emerald Isle.
Saw some friends. Another one of our pledge brothers, John Torres, and his girlfriend Hartley Hefner. Just thought it was a good time. We were celebrating Hartley's birthday, and mm-hmm. I said, "Hey, well, y'all are already gonna go down there. We'll come back down. Y'all can just stay at our place." And it was a great time. Ended up just already. You've seen the video.
I saw the video.
We ended up crashing a party in some kind of trailer park next to the.
How did this start, Jared? You got to explain this to the people. Explain this to Pirate Nation.
So we're down there, and I'm assuming that a lot of you in Pirate Nation know Emerald Isle, been to Emerald Isle, visited. So we went out to eat. Great new restaurant, Fish Hut Grill.
Mm-hmm.
Had some drinks. Then they were like, "Hey, the girls wanted to go play putt-putt." So we went and played putt-putt, mini golf. For those of you that don't know that it's called putt-putt,
they know what putt-putt is.
Hey, you gotta cover all your bases. I've even heard people call it silly golf. I don't. That's weird.
That sounds like a northern thing.
That's a northern thing. Gotta be. So, anyways, they're like, "Oh yeah, let's go get some ice cream." So we go. All the ice cream shops are closed by now. It's like 10:30.
Right.
And so we're like, "Hey, let's just go across to the pier. We're on our golf cart. We're whipping it around." And so we drive across from the Ben and Jerry's parking lot to the pier parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just hanging it out. We're hanging out. We're going to go walk on the pier. And when we got off the golf cart, Savannah, my wife, was like, "Wow, they're really having a fun time." And like... Hartley was on a phone call, so we were like, we just walked up on the pier, and we went and did our own thing. Sat out there for about 10-15 minutes at the edge. Saw somebody catch like a 3.5-foot shark off the edge or off the end of the pier. Well, we come back, and Grant, we haven't had a drink in like 2.5 hours at this mm-hmm. point. We're all like, I mean, I'm pretty sober at this point.
Right.
And we're just walking out. This group is still having a party. And when I talk about party, these people are, like, they have strobe lights. just going off. You got a real DJ out there, like somebody singing into the mic, like it. You want to talk about the party to end all parties?
If we're gonna do a big, we're gonna do a big then. You
know? Yeah, and so Hartley, John's girlfriend, looks at me and she goes, "Should we go over there and crash it?" And I was like, I mean, if that's what the group wants to do, then that's what the group will do. And so John and Hartley led the way, and we just showed up into – we walked in, and it was definitely a interesting crowd, fun times. The people – the best part was, like, the lady that was, I guess, the host of the party. She comes up to me, and she goes she's like, "Yeah, this is a party for my 18-year-old daughter." Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, cool! Like, that's awesome." Yeah, we saw y'all's lights and we heard your music, and we have a house over there because like we weren't supposed to be there apparently. So I was like, "Yeah, we got a house over there, and we just wanted to come check out what was going on." And she was like, "Well, y'all should have come earlier. Y'all should have been here around 7:30." And I was like, "Yeah, well, maybe you should have sent me an invite." But yeah, this went on for like 30 minutes. People were drunk. Like, it was a fun time. People playing cornhole, food. We didn't eat any food. We didn't play any cornhole. We just danced. And I had the best video of our fraternity brother, John, and his girlfriend dancing to "Pour Some Sugar on Me" by Def Leppard.
This is a must see. I have to watch this video.
Yeah, it's a video. It's the one I sent to the group chat.
Okay, so that one was a little short, though.
It was short.
I need an extended version of this dancing.
I didn't want to get caught, like, videotaping these random people's party. Like, I didn't want to get, like, thrown out of the party. We had just gotten there.
Right.
So, yeah, we were there for about 45 minutes. We had a good old time. Somebody came up to us and we were like, "Y'all were the life of the party." And we were like, we were only here for 45 minutes. But I also saw a guy wearing NC State shorts, so yeah, that party must not have been that good.
Well, it was a dud then.
Until we got there. But yeah, that was our weekend already.
Good times on Emerald Isle.
Good times. We spent last week down with the whole gang down at Emerald Isle, and that was really good to see everybody. But now we are back, and we have some sports news. We have some ECU news to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, our man, our buddy, somebody that, like, I mean, that I'm very proud of. I'm glad that he's with ECU. Cliff Godwin, head baseball coach. I almost said head football coach. That's how I drank too much Jack this weekend. but Cliff Godwin getting a contract extension through, I think it's June 30th of 2025.
Yep.
Awesome. I mean, can't say enough about Cliff Godwin. Everything he means to the university. I mean, I know that things ended poorly with Coach Ruff, a former ECU athlete turned head football coach. But I'm glad that the university is handling the Cliff Godwin situation a lot better. A lot better.
Yeah, taking care of their quality coaches that they have.
Yep. So, that's good to see. Artie, do you have a take on this?
It's just a no-brainer to me. I mean, he's been there with 6 years, you know, four NCAA regional berths, two super regional appearances, an American Athletic regular season title, two AAC tournament titles, you know, 40-plus wins in three seasons, you know, 214 and 113 overall record. So, to me, it's just a no-brainer. I mean, he's an excellent coach, and he's going to be here for a while. And, you know, the goal is to get, you know, to pass the Super Regional to Omaha. But, I mean, we're right there on the door, you know, and I really see it happening within the next three to 5 years.
Yeah, so. And D1 Baseball, I think it was this past week, they put out their 8 for Omaha next year. Honestly, the last 3 years they've had ECU listed on this.
Right. You know?
The eight newcomers or eight teams to watch out for Omaha. So, yeah, ECU's on that list, and it's going to happen soon enough. I'm happy with this decision. I mean, I love the passion that Cliff Godwin has for East Carolina University, for the baseball program. I think it's good for the university and the city as a whole. So, yeah, I mean, no-brainer.
No, yeah, it's absolute no-brainer. You know, this needed to be done, and it got done.
Yeah. So, once again, I mean – kudos to the athletic department. But also, we talk about it, like, we were just talking about Ruffin McNeil. Mm-hmm. That reminds me, Ruffin McNeil has a new job.
Sadly.
I don't know how this happens. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Well, it's for State. It's like a double win because they get
fuck State.
They get an excellent football mind in Ruffin McNeil, and they get to give us the huge middle finger because they definitely did this out of spite just a little bit to go get a true pirate through and through. I mean, I don't care where he works. He's always going to be a pirate through and through. But you know, I'm happy for Ruff because I know personally he came back to North Carolina to be closer to his dad. So personally, I am happy for him. I'm not happy for NC State, but I'm happy for Ruff. So that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see this happen, especially with the way things ended at ECU. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that he would come in and come work for the university, work at ECU.
Yep.
Work with either the ECU football staff or even as a whole with the athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe player development. That's what I was hoping. I was hoping that he would have some kind of role there. I did not want to see him go to the UNC Raleigh, and I didn't want to see that.
Yeah.
But with all that being said, he's there. I wanted to wish him the best of luck.
Mm-hmm.
And when ECU plays NC State next, I hope we run it right down their throat.
Yeah, I still hope State goes 0-12.
Yeah.
But I am happy for Ruffin McNeil.
That's the one thing I've got to say is I hate that he's there.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather him go to a school like UNC or somewhere like that, but
you know, and we can't blame anybody but ourselves because the way that we did him.
The only person we have to blame is Jeff Confort. Jeff Confort is, and I've talked about this, that man, he's not worth the toilet paper you wipe your ass with after you wipe your ass.
Well, let him know how you really feel, Jared.
Hey, there it is. Jeff Confort can lick my boot. I don't care. All right? Yeah, like, I don't want anybody that ever talks about ECU, if they ever mention Jeff Confort, it should be with a negative connotation because mm-hmm. he's the one that put us in this mess. He's the one that made that decision to fire Ruffin McNeil, and it's one that we've had to live with ever since. And I mean, I love Ruff just as much as everybody, and I'm glad we're on the right track, but the way that it was handled was not the right way to handle it.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really the big thing. But Artie, I know this podcast it probably isn't going to take as long,
mm-hmm.
With how much stuff we got to get to. We do have actually. Some
questions, right?
We do have some questions, but we'll get to those after the interview that we're going to do here in a little bit. But I wanted to say, ECU football practice is finally starting up. They're moving into phase two, into the season. Really good to see some of these guys. From what I've seen, these guys are ready to ball. These guys are going to be ready.
Yeah.
Come August 29th, and it's something that I'm excited about. What I wanted to kind of do this. We've kind of been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
What's your expectations on how the season will play out with coronavirus?
I mean, at this point, you know, this is something that's never happened. So I know a lot of these kids, they are not going to take this opportunity and this season for granted. I know they're going to, you know, it's not just ECU. I'm just talking about student athletes as a whole. They're all going to come back in the fall and be ready to go. They're going to want to showcase their talents. They're going to want to, you know, showcase to everyone why they do what they do. And so from an ECU standpoint, I'm extremely excited to know that we're getting back to practice, to know that these coaches can finally get together with these guys and really start to implement a game plan going forward. My expectations for the season as a whole really haven't changed. I'm not expecting greatness. I'm not expecting a conference title. But I am expecting competition to compete with every single opponent that we play. Whether it's, you know, just conference opponents. I know you wanted to talk about the conference scheduling that we might only be playing within the conference. But, you know, whether it's a 6-game season or a 12-game season or a 10-game season, I just want to see us compete, you know. And yep. I think we'll do that. I think Mike Houston's gonna have a group of guys ready to go whenever that day is. He's gonna have a group of guys ready to go and ready to give it their all day one.
Yep, definitely. So with that, I think it's time. We're about 15 minutes into the podcast. Why don't we go ahead and send it over to our interview with Haley Alton? Once again, great interview. Had a blast talking to her. The very last part of this interview is it's something. I mean,
It was a great last part of that interview.
Like, the whole interview was great, but like this last part, make sure you listen through the whole thing. This last part is fantastic. really, some quality podcasting, some quality journalism happening on our end. We're asking the hard-hitting questions at the end. So, yeah, without further ado, here's our interview with Haley Alton, former ECU soccer player. So, once again... So, today we're pleased to be joined by a great guest. Her name is Haley Alton. So, for those of you that may not know, you should know already. Haley was an all-conference soccer player at ECU. She also served as team captain. She's originally from Southern California, made her way to Greenville, North Carolina, spent some time there playing soccer for ECU. She then went on to work for the AAC Digital Network. She was the first full-time sideline analyst, TV host for the AAC Digital Network. Now she's working in esports. Haley, welcome to the podcast. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Thank you. You guys really hyped me up there. Makes me sound actually interesting. Thank you.
No, you absolutely are.
You are definitely interesting. So, just kind of wanted to jump right in and kind of see. So you came to ECU from Southern California and you played soccer. How was that transition from one complete side of the different side of the country to coming to the Eastern Coast?
Yeah, I get that question a decent amount, actually, and mostly when I was at school there. But oddly enough, a lot of athletes at ECU, especially from what I remember on the soccer team and the softball team, quite a few athletes that came from Southern California. And to be honest with you, I had never heard of ECU. It was probably about my sophomore year of high school. I was playing in this showcase in Houston, Texas. And the coaches from ECU at the time, they were there, and they connected with me afterwards. And I was very humbled and fortunate that they had offered me a scholarship and said, hey, come check us out. The worst you do is go on an official visit and you hate it. So I made my way out to Greenville, North Carolina, and I had an absolute blast. I thought it was so cool. And really kind of had everything I was looking for between the campus is awesome, the athletic facilities were really cool. And at that time, we were the soccer stadium anyways, it was old Bunting Field. So, but they had promised a brand new state-of-the-art soccer stadium and locker room. And sure enough, they came through. So that was pretty cool. But to be honest with you, I think what really sold me on ECU, minus the fact that I had what I wanted to major in broadcast journalism. The soccer team was coming off of a Conference USA championship at the time. But what really like kind of captured my attention was when I got to go out for my first football weekend in the fall, my senior year of high school, and experience game day in Greenville. And coming from Los Angeles, like, just the level of fandom is so different. You're in a big city. And when I got to Greenville, and like the moment you cross the border into that town, like everything starts looking super purple and people are just like, they're crazy, but in like the best way possible. And I was like, this is going to be really fun and something like totally different than I'd ever been used to.
Yeah. Cause like in LA, you have a lot of things to do, right? You can never run out of things to do in LA, but in Greenville, like especially in the fall, it's football and it's only football and everybody's going to do that. Like they're going to tailgate, they're going to be there for the games. Like the entire city is going to come out. So I definitely understand where you're coming from.
Exactly. And I think like one of the things that I have the greatest amount of respect for, and it is just such a college football town in LA. I love LA and I'm never going to hate on my home, but when the Trojans aren't winning and the Bruins aren't winning, you notice that the stadium looks a heck of a lot emptier.
Yeah.
And in Greenville, I mean, football has had, you know, its highs and lows over the last 10 years. But I think every season, the fan base starts out with this fresh hope, and people still come and they still support the team, and I think that's really cool. And definitely not bandwagoners in Greenville.
Yeah, definitely not. We pride ourselves on being Pirates through and through, and coming to showing out to games.
Yeah,
I know. Over the past couple of years, it's been hard to come out, but they're still coming out and still supporting the team. Which, I mean, I think it's shown on a recruiting standpoint for ECU. But looking at it, so you come to ECU and you're experiencing college. At what point did you decide that you wanted to, I know you said you wanted to study broadcast journalism. At what point did you decide that, hey, I kind of want to go into sports journalism rather than traditional?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, all of my life, I grew up in a sports family. I grew up playing soccer and volleyball primarily. I like loved being around sports. And so I knew sadly that it would eventually, I think, come to an end. So I was like, what am I going to do after this? And I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do more than just stay around sports. So being an athlete was hard just because of the schedule, and there's not really a lot of breaks throughout the year. But I did the best I could in terms of just getting different internships, primarily in the summer. So I had some really cool experiences. I went home to LA and interned for CBS and got to help shadow and like learn and cover the Dodgers. Another summer I went to Philadelphia and helped cover the Phillies, you know, all shadowing and just like learning from people that were super good at their craft at the time. And like all those experiences were really cool. But I'd be remiss without mentioning Greenville's most famous sports anchor, Brian Bailey. So Brian, he allowed me to shadow him every Monday for about 2 years because Monday was our only off day for soccer. That's so awesome. I made my way into WNCT and I sat at his desk with him and probably annoyed him because I just had a ton of questions and probably talked the whole time. So, but Brian is like by far one of my favorite mentors I've ever had. And so even though I couldn't spend a ton of hours every week doing it, I certainly got to learn a lot from him. And after my soccer season was done senior year, I actually spent the spring working in the athletic department my last few months of college and got to cover some ECU baseball once my duties as an athlete were over. And so got to spend a lot of time in the athletic department. So really just like so many people in Greenville in general were super supportive of helping to like accommodate and work around my schedule and like let me learn from them. So I've always been super appreciative of that. And it definitely helped lead me to where I am today. Fun fact. I think one of the coolest moments of my professional career was actually two AAC football championships ago. I got to host our pre and post game show with Brian Bailey. So yeah, that's awesome. I went from being his, you know, intern for 2 years in college, and then we actually got to work together and host a couple of shows together. So it's kind of neat to see it all come full circle.
That's awesome. Now, when you were traveling all over the country, I usually ask a lot of people, what was your favorite team to play for, organization, but what was your favorite destination overall? Team, city, atmosphere, people, what would you say was your favorite overall so far?
In the American, I assume.
Yeah.
So, you know, no secret that the AAC is pretty spread out. So got to spend a lot of time in airplanes and traveling. But it's so hard to get this question because I would say that like there's so many different regions of the country that this conference covers. Mm-hmm. Like they're all so incredibly different. And I'm like a big foodie. So like, I love to like check out like the best restaurants when I get to a city and yep. try to like get, you know, whether it's like a few other historic sites or definitely restaurants for sure. But I love to like check something out when I'm there, if I have time. But like the biggest, probably like debate that we constantly had was which city offered the best barbecue, because you have like all these different regions between yep. like Houston, Texas, got their own thing going on in Memphis, yep. Greenville, obviously. You know, so there's just all these different cities that bring like their own style of barbecue. So that was probably the biggest like debate that we had all the time. But really cool because it's a mix of small towns like Greenville and Tulsa. But then you have these huge cities like Orlando and Houston. So everywhere was so different. It is really, really hard to pick. I'm always biased because I love going back to Greenville and getting to see some of my people. And it's like, you know, it's perks because I get to see familiar faces, but also work. So that's always fun. But honestly, too tough to pick, but really cool experience just getting to travel to like 12 different cities and everything was a plane right away. So I can't think of any other opportunity like it where you get to see so many different places and experience so much different weather and food and people and everything. So
yeah.
Those Florida schools are tough, man. Going up to UConn in the fall.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Cincinnati. It gets chilly up there. So
Philly and with Temple.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting that you say that about like the barbecue. Like I've always thought that. So Haley, I don't know if you know anything. I'm from about Lexington barbecue. I'm from Lexington, North Carolina, born and raised. Okay. But I mean, I came down to Greenville. I went to ECU, did my 4 years, enjoyed my time there. I don't say which barbecue is my favorite. I'm not going to say that on the podcast, but like, I think about it, like, cause I have thought about the Houston, the Memphis, the Eastern style barbecue, and that you got some other kinds of food. I mean, I know you have like Skyline Chili up in Cincinnati, like
wild combination, by the way. Wild combo.
Seriously, like spaghetti and chili, like and chili. What the hell? But seriously, I've thought like, I know the AAC is moving their headquarters down to Houston, or down to Texas now. They just officially did that. I'm thinking, okay, well, instead of doing the clam bake like we've always done in up north in the Northeast, let's do a chili cook-off or like do a barbecue cook-off.
Yeah, like a traditional barbecue.
Yeah, like you, each place brings their barbecue. And if you don't have barbecue, if you're not like Greenville or Houston or Memphis, hey, why don't we bring why don't you bring your
style? It's a valid idea.
No. Yeah,
solid idea.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Mr. Oresco next time. Yeah. Next time we get him on the phone.
I will say though, there's one thing here that I must throw in, and that is a great idea, and they may have to consider it with their new path moving forward in Texas. But for those media members and players and teams that got to experience like media day in Newport, Rhode Island, it is like one of the most incredible events of the year, and like it was so fun, like seeing players, like I mean there was like hundreds of lobsters and they're all like cracking lobsters open. You have linemen that are like eating like 9 or 10 lobsters. It was pure insanity, but it was like kind of it was a once in a lifetime experience for me to get to do that every summer and to go up there. So it was kind of cool because you get to go to this like really surreal remote location and talk about football like on the water. It was awesome.
Yeah, but that was awesome.
In a hotel, you know, like SEC or, you know, some of these other conferences, like just where you could be anywhere. But that was like one of the most special events of the year working at the AAC was Football Media Day and the Clam Bake. But to embrace their Texas roots, they may have to consider your idea.
Yeah. I'll send in a formal idea like submission.
Yeah.
To the conference, and
I don't know if that'll help bring the conference together or tear people apart though, because fans are pretty passionate and opinionated about this topic.
That is for sure.
Now, speaking of your time with the American, you created the American's first ever original weekly show called The Rise. Tell us how that went to be, and you know how that experience went creating that first original weekly show.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when I think that far back. So I ended up working at the American for about 6 years. And when I started there, the conference was 1 year old and they were a baby, and as was I. So when I got there, it was just, they were kind of trying to figure it all out and like create their new identity after having separated from the Big East. And so they hired me to basically come into the office and watch every single football game and basketball game and cut highlights and just do kind of some basic like video highlight packages. And I'm like, this is cool. I'm like watching sports for my job. That's awesome. But like, I kind of got there and like I started opening some doors and some closets, and I opened this one room and I found all this camera equipment and a green screen and a TriCaster and all these different items that I could use to make a show that were basically like left over from the Big East days, and they were super dusty. And I asked my boss at the time, I'm like, hey, if I like get this stuff like up and running, could I start doing a show once a week? And he was like, yeah, sure. Why not? So it's pretty terrifying to like look back at some of the first episodes, but it was my very best attempt at trying to cover 12 different schools from Providence, Rhode Island, when everyone was scattered all over the place. But honestly, it was like kind of, you know, we started this conversation off, you know, you don't really need a lot to make content, and you don't have to have the newest, coolest equipment and all this fancy stuff to to produce stuff. And so that's kind of how that started. And once it caught on a little bit, I was super fortunate. The commissioner was on board and they kind of invested a lot more into it. So it started to become a daily show, and we started to add members to our team and build it out. And didn't really mean for it to happen that way at the time, but it was definitely super cool that it did.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed watching. I mean, I know a lot of the things have been on like Facebook Live or on like through the Facebook channel, the YouTube channels. I've always enjoyed watching the AAC Digital Network, and always knowing that, I mean, you were an ECU alum, like seeing that, seeing like the great things that ECU is doing in the conference. Kind of taking a step back and looking at, okay, from your point of view, working when you were working with the conference, what were you thinking about all the transitions that were going on at East Carolina University? It's been a rough couple of years. Kind of want to get your take on how things are viewed at the conference level.
You know, cover everybody equally, but I can't help that to like my core that I'm a fan inside, just and having known, you know, a lot of the coaches and players and staff members, it's like you want people to succeed and do well. So you know, I was lucky. Like when I was a student athlete, I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better experience. It was so fun, you know, being there with Ruffin, and you know, it was just like so cool. You'd see Ruffin like walking down the street and you'd be like, hey, what's up? And he was just, you know, walking down Greenville Boulevard. You're just like, wow, that's pretty cool. But definitely, yeah, definitely been a lot of changes, and, you know, has been a rough past few years. But one of my favorite things about ECU that's always kind of had this like underdog, you know, blue collar, diamond in the rough mentality. And so I don't know, I really like believe in Mike Houston. I think that he really proved himself at his last stop, and I think you know, there's a lot of experience coming back this year. And I think football, and just speaking to football, I guess, I think there's going to be a step forward no matter what happens. But you know, I continue to believe it'll get back to where it used to be. And I think you know, Greenville as a community, like, is going to just, you know, keep hoping that this is the year that it happens. And I don't know. Yeah, it's been definitely tough, though, to watch as a fan at times. But I think that, like, this is the fresh start. And so I think it's kind of only up from here. So I'm excited about it. But definitely, I don't know. Yeah, you just, like, you it's not an easy position to be in. And it's not an easy thing for anybody, because, like, change impacts, you know, these players that are out there, and having – you know, new coaches and ADs, like, it impacts everybody. So it's definitely hard, but hopefully there's stability moving forward, and you know, do the best they can.
Yeah, and that's I mean, that's something that I'm glad to hear. We've had several guests on that have said kind of the same thing, that they're seeing the change, and we believe the same thing too, that we're seeing the transition, and we're seeing the transition into that new era of ECU football and ECU athletics. I know we've had some rough times, but we're on the edge. We're on the precipice of
finally on the right track.
Getting out of that.
On the right track.
Hey, and I mean, like, I don't know. I just, you know, I look back to when I was a student there, and I don't know. I think it's always like really, ECU has always prided itself on, you know, they don't always have the, you know, five-star recruit and the most well-known player in the country coming into town. But then, I mean, could you have lined up like a better 5, 6, 7 years of receivers to have come through that school and like, see people go on to the NFL and like do big things. So you know, people may not show up to ECU with a name that everyone knows, but, you know, there's a handful that have left and certainly caught the attention of people across the country. And like, I mean, it doesn't get much cooler than having your starting quarterback be a hometown guy. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, like, how cool is that going to be this year? I'm so excited.
That's, I mean, it's honestly one of the coolest things. I mean, it's one of those, like, almost like a Cinderella story of, okay, this is the hometown hero coming back and saying, okay, I'm going to put the team on my back and we're gonna turn this thing around.
And it just speaks to the tradition, right, and just how big football is in Greenville. You know what I mean? As a kid, I know Holton was growing up wanting to play for the Pirates and nobody else. So it just speaks to the tradition that we have in Greenville.
Yeah, you have a hometown quarterback, and then every time the kid scores a touchdown, his dad's going to let you know about the PA, right?
Yeah, yep, seriously. Yep. Morgan Ayler's friend of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, switching gears a little bit, because you're now covering esports, right? And so what has been the biggest difference between going from, I guess, traditional sports to now covering esports?
Yeah, so it definitely was an unexpected turn that I decided to take. But I think esports is definitely an area that is rapidly growing, especially in professional organizations. But I think we'll see it a lot at the college level too. So I really just wanted to get into that world and learn a lot. But everything is so different about it. There's this whole video game world out there that I never knew existed. They might be crazier and more passionate than college sports fans, like remarkable. But it's super fun. They're super competitive in its own way. And so the video game that I currently cover and work for is called Ultimate Rivals The Rink. So it's an NHL ice hockey game, but
it's
pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
Jared would love that.
It's pretty cool because our CEO, he's like a total genius, but he basically was able to negotiate licenses with like all the major leagues and like players associations. So you can have LeBron James and Alex Morgan playing Alex Ovechkin and I don't know, Justin Turner. So we have like MLB, NFL, NHL, wow. WNBA.
That
so it's like
very interesting.
Men and women, sport crossover. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool and a concept that hasn't been done before. So it's still a young game, and I think it's going to be awesome once it gets going in the esports world. But it's going to be part of a franchise. So later this year, we'll have our NBA version of the game coming out, the court. But right now, it's all mobile and it's in the Apple Arcade. So so it's pretty cool. But definitely totally different than sports. But you know, despite the obvious of COVID currently going on, my plan is to, you know, continue kind of immersing myself in the esports world, but I don't have the intention of leaving the real sports world either. Mm-hmm. I need a little bit of both in my life. So, but yeah, totally different, but equally
a good balance. Yeah. So I also wanted to ask, looking at esports, and I know this is such a weird time that we're living in. What I've kind of seen, and just this is my personal viewpoint, the esports world has begun to really take hold and really grow, especially with the coronavirus, with COVID-19. What is kind of your take? Is that something that y'all are seeing at your company? Is that something that you're seeing from your standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible, especially when all the professional leagues came to an abrupt halt. I mean, the NBA is a great example. You know, you had players from teams like quote unquote finishing out their seasons playing NBA 2K. I mean, yeah, there's so many athletes, like ones that we work with all the time, or athletes like in the NFL, Juju Smith-Schuster, he's a huge gamer. De'Aaron Fox, NBA, huge gamer. So I think you've seen a lot of like professional athletes during this time play video games while they haven't been able to be with their teams. I think that is interesting. I think, you know, just us average Joes at home have been looking for things to do too. So it's definitely, it's shined a lot of light on the esports world. And, you know, before all of this, I mean, people were gathering in major venues. I mean, they were selling out NFL stadiums for Fortnite. I was supposed to go to this event in LA at the Shrine Auditorium for a huge esports event in March that didn't happen. But so this stuff is actually taking place in person a lot. But unlike real sports, pretty easy to shift it to home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the one thing like I've noticed. So when sports kind of went away abruptly, I was like, what am I going to watch?
Right.
And I just started watching at one point. I knew I had like a problem with like my sports addiction when I was watching people play a NASCAR video game.
Yeah.
Like just watching videos of NASCAR video games on YouTube. Like I don't even watch NASCAR,
right.
But like I got down a rabbit hole of watching NASCAR video games. That's how I knew. And that's how I knew it was going to be a big thing at that point.
Yeah, I mean, ESPN was, I think, you know, at one point grasping for anything. And I mean, they were also, you know, streaming. They got some professional athletes to hop on and they were creating some esports tournaments. DraftKings has had to do stuff like that. People that are focused on, you know, the sports gambling world. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that have been able to kind of latch on to it for sure during these times. That being said, I think we're all ready for sports to come back.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. So Haley, we really enjoyed talking to you. We have one question that we ask all of our guests and we're excited for your answer.
It's gonna be the hardest question we ask all day.
It's the hardest question we ask. Okay. You ready?
I don't know. Hit me with it.
All right. So you're in Greenville. Maybe you're in Greenville covering a game. Mm-hmm. Let's just say hypothetically, ECU was in a conference championship of some kind. And you're covering it here in Greenville. And then ECU wins. Time to celebrate. You go downtown. You hit Sup Dogs. All right.
Okay.
All right. Great establishment. Friends of the podcast.
Friends of the podcast.
All right.
Two stories now, right?
What's that?
I said two stories now, right?
Yeah, two stories.
Got a new look. All right.
Oh, yeah.
And growing back-to-back champs. when you go to Sup Dogs, what do you order?
Well, first things first, I order a beer. Like, that's just easy.
Okay.
I got to get the beverage going. I feel like this is probably a trick question.
No trick questions.
I mean, a hot dog, naturally. But I have to really, like, be honest here. I haven't ordered anything from Sup Dog since, like, 2013, maybe. So, I'm a little unfamiliar with the current menu, but I'm pretty.
I don't think it's changed much.
Hot dog and a
hot
beer.
Dog. Hot dog and a beer. Hey, well, how about
that? Does that pass the test?
That passes. You're a true pirate through and through. How about next time? We've got this kind of running thing. We're gonna meet up with all of our guests at some point.
Right,
at Sup Dogs. And
okay, fine. I'll let you guys take me to Sup Dogs.
All right. And we'll drink Sup Crushes and have some hot dogs. Okay.
Sup Crushes. Wow. Honestly, though, downtown Greenville, totally different place than when I left Greenville in 2013. I walked through there probably 2 years ago and was like, whoa.
Yeah.
A lot has happened, but for the better. Pretty cool.
Half the bars aren't there and
renamed something
else.
I thought you were going to ask me what my favorite bar was. And
well,
I think the
okay.
Half of them are gone, so.
Okay. Well, I mean, we were there around the time you were there. So what was your favorite bar? Where'd you go?
Well, hopefully none of the coaches are listening to this because we were really good and we didn't go out. But other than that, we spent a lot of time at, Fourth Street.
Yeah, I think it's something else now.
Okay.
Is it Buggies now?
Buggies, yeah.
Yeah, it's Buggies
now. Yep.
Yeah, whatever JJ's establishment is. Still Life, naturally.
Yep.
Yep. That's also two stories now.
Yeah, that's like almost two and a half stories, basically. Yep. Mm-hmm. Got a rooftop bar.
Oh my God, this is like, wow, my memory. PJ's? Is that a place? I don't
PB's?
Know. PBs, thank
PBs,
you.
Pantana Bob's,
PBs. PBs is the spot. those are, oh my gosh, I need to after this is going to bother me. I need to go back and figure this out. But yeah, those were three solid spots at the time. I probably sound super uncool now.
No,
they're all still there.
Still life and PBs are definitely two spots.
Longevity that, proves they were good.
Still life and PBs were two spots that Artie and I frequented quite often. Yeah. When
we were in, then you get older and you go to 503 or whatever.
519, yeah.
519.
Yep, yep. Sign your name on the wall and take a 519 shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Good times. Well, Haley, thank you again for joining us on the Boneyard Podcast. It's been a real pleasure having you.
Absolutely.
And thank you for all you've done for the American Athletic Conference and ECU as a whole.
Thank you. You guys are great. And fingers crossed for football and fingers crossed for fans. And hopefully we can all gather in Greenville pretty soon. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll all go to Sup Dogs all together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm holding you to that. I don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
Names of all the bars.
So. Definitely. We'll just do a bar crawl, all right?
Here we go.
All right, Haley. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take it easy now.
Thanks, guys.
That was a great interview that we had with Haley Outen. We hope that everybody enjoyed it. Artie, though, there's some news we need to talk about,
mm-hmm.
and I want to get your take on this, okay? The Power Five conferences, I use quotation marks around that. Some of them, two of them right now, have decided to go with a conference-only schedule.
Right.
This year, those two being the Big Ten and Pac-12,
mm-hmm.
That means that games were like I believe Cincinnati was supposed to play Nebraska. I want to say somebody was supposed to play Wisconsin this year. Like we had four or five games mm-hmm. against those conferences as a conference ourselves.
Yeah,
that means those games are no longer happening.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they've canceled them basically is to save money. They don't want to pay to play these non-conference games because that's what they are. They're money games,
mm-hmm.
right? So they're saying they're basically just backing out like the pansies that they are. If you're the autonomous conferences, if you're the Power Five and you're the Power Five because you have all this money, that's the whole reason they're the Power Five is because they're money,
mm-hmm.
right? Then why can't you pay to play the games that you had on your contract? What is your take on why?
Well, I think that they're going to cover this up by saying health and safety, right?
And that's fucking bullshit.
It's for the safety of the players and the coaches. But here's the thing. When you're going to play in-conference schedule, you still have to travel.
Yeah.
You still have to – even if you only have six games, you're still going to have – you're still playing the game of football. You understand what I'm saying? Like – there's still risk if you only play one game or 12 games. There's going to be risk. So, you know, that whole, oh, we're just trying to protect the safety of our players and coaches. To me, I don't believe that because you're still going out playing these games. And so don't tell me that you care about the health and safety of the players if you're still willing to have a college football season. Now, granted, I want a college football season. And I understand that there's going to be a certain risk that we have to take going forward to get back to any sort of normal life, which life is not going to be normal going forward at all. But I think it's just a cover up to, like you said, to save money. They don't want to expend this money with these non-conference games. And so they're like, okay, we're just going to keep it in-house. We'll just do in-conference. It's very interesting to see how this is going to pan out going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. So, say, I know the SEC, the ACC are looking at doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, this year, let's just look at a school like South Carolina, okay? South Carolina plays ECU. ECU is about a, what, three-hour drive from Columbia?
Mm-hmm.
Three and a half, maybe? Well, then, they've got to play. They take a trip down to Florida.
Right.
That's at least a six-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
They also take a where else are they going? They're going to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's to play LSU. That's at least a 15-hour drive, close to it at least, 10 to 12 hours at least. So they're not going to drive. We all know that they're going to fly.
Right. And it'd be ECU, private planes, you know.
And ECU would fly too, but it's the same thing. Like, what difference does it make if you're going to play these games anyways? It makes no sense.
Now they are saying that this is going to help assure that we have a football season. Because if we try to have the non-conference game, it's going to be a little more of a headache trying to do the logistics of dealing with this pandemic and then having all these teams fly all over the country. But at the same time, teams are going to be flying all over the country regardless.
Exactly.
So,
and here's my thing. For 1 year, why don't you just abolish conferences if that's what you want to do? Get rid of the conference play. Play in state, just like football or high school football.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, instead of ECU playing at South Carolina this week, they travel down to Chapel Hill and play the Tar Heels. Or instead of App going and playing whoever they play, they play a cakewalk schedule anyways, but instead of App playing at Georgia Southern or wherever they play, whatever teams are in their conference, I always forget because they're interchangeable basically. You're looking at their 2020 schedule, instead of them playing at Wisconsin. App was supposed to play at Wisconsin. That's a Big Ten school that they're not going to play. Instead of playing them, why don't they come down and play us in Greenville?
And also, the Power Five is not taking into account how much this hurts.
They don't give a shit.
Conferences that are not in the Power Five. Because our non-conference schedule is the whole reason why we even have a chance to try to make it to a New Year's Six Bowl or make it to a bigger bowl game. Of course, the SEC can play each other within conference and be like, oh, yeah, we feel like we deserve to go to a national championship. We played Alabama and LSU and Georgia.
If they're going to start doing this is the year, because there's not going to be a bowl season.
There can't be. How can you determine a true top 25 or a true playoff
this is gonna
if
show
nobody's playing out of conference?
This year is going to do... I think this year will do irreparable harm to the sport of college football if this is what happens and across the whole football season. Because what's going to happen is they're going to say, well, we can do this every year, and we'll just schedule one or two non-conference games with the other Power 5 schools. That's going to really hurt all those lower programs, and that's what the Power 5 wants.
Now, I will say this. They'd have to expand the playoff.
They have to.
It had to be at least eight. If you're gonna keep it within just conferences, that means you have to have a team outside of the Power Five automatically qualify
at that point,
for the playoff. You have to.
At that point, what you do is you take the top eight conferences based on strength of schedule, RPI, all of that, and you say, okay, who are these conference champions?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then I hate to say this because I know what's gonna happen. You seed those conferences, you seed those schools, and they're going to say, well, the American Athletic Conference is seeded sixth, the Mountain West Conference is seeded seventh, and then you have probably Conference USA seeded eighth.
Right.
And
now, I'm going to be honest with you. If that happens, if they are willing to expand the playoff for one season, then I'm okay with it, because that means you're giving – others outside of the Power Five a fair chance at a national title
or
a New Year's Six Bowl.
My worry is looking forward. Well, you've got the group of five. I use quotation marks again because we believe it's a group of four, and we believe in the Power Six. The group of five, group of four,
right,
they have an automatic bid to the New Year's Six Bowl. They have an automatic bid, just the top ranked team at the end of the season that is from the group of five. My thought is what's going to happen in the future when these conferences realize, hey, we can actually just, you know what, pull out these games that we have scheduled, and we'll go play other Power Five conferences. We've talked about it before. Alabama hasn't played a non-conference game on the road in like 12 years, 8 to 12 years, something like that. I don't check my numbers, but I know that for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to go this year and play USC, or they were supposed to play another powerhouse.
Right.
And that's not going to happen now. But they're going to play 10 conference games or whatever, because that's what the SEC will do that.
Oh, yeah.
They will do that.
And the last thing I'll say about it is, do not tell me that it is about the health and safety of players and coaches. Do not feed me that crock of shit.
It's not.
Excuse my language, because I don't want to hear that. If it was about the health and safety, there would not be a football season. But there's going to be a football season, which means you're going to have risk. There's going to be the risk of catching the novel coronavirus out there. It doesn't matter whether you're going from North Carolina to South Carolina or South Carolina to California. The risk is going to be there. It's all over the country. So don't give me that health and safety stuff.
Yeah, I think this is the year that it's going to be interesting to see. I don't really foresee them. There's not going to be a championship handed out this year. I don't see that. I think we'll have a football season, but it's going to be all for naught. There's not going to be something to play for at the end of the year.
Right.
And maybe at that point, the Power Five will realize, hey, kind of sucks to not have something to play for all season. They tell you, oh yeah, we're going to have all the same goal. But then at the end of the year, only half the programs have that mm-hmm. same goal. I think that it's going to be tough, but I'm going to be interested to see how ECU and other group of five with quotation marks, I'm going to keep saying that, group of five with quotation mark programs to handle this situation. Because what I think is going to happen is these non-conference games that are pulled from the group of five schools still need that money.
Yeah.
And so, one, they're probably going to get – they should be able to get that money from these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
They should get their buyout money. That should be a thing, at least in most cases, as long as the athletic director and the coaching staff had the contract well worded. You look at it, ECU is supposed to play at South Carolina. App's supposed to play at Wisconsin
mm-hmm.
the week of September 19th. Well, if both those conferences say, okay, conference-only games, those two schools, they should say, hey, let's get our money from those two schools, and then let's have a game down in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium so the Pirates can punch them in the mouth. Right? So, I mean, that's just an idea for what we can do. I mean,
and nothing set in stone just yet. It's a tricky situation. They don't know what they're going to do just yet. They're just throwing ideas out there, but it is looking like a real possibility.
I don't foresee the American Athletic Conference doing that. I only really see it happening probably in the Power Five conferences. Mm. I think the American Athletic Conference will want as many games as possible to be on national television, and some of those non-conference games will be on there. Like your ECU Marshall should be on national television,
right.
And it's already slated to be on that. Now, and I just misspoke. I'm sorry. The South Carolina game is the 12th. Well, we've got Norfolk State on the 19th. I'm sure ECU would love to get out of that Norfolk State contract and go play app.
Yeah.
Because you're gonna have better TV rankings and get more exposure there than playing Norfolk State. That's enough of that. It's gonna be interesting to see how this plays out, but just know that if the whole Power Five, the autonomous conferences, say, yeah, we're only playing conference games only, and then they only do a four-team college football playoff, if they have a college football playoff, that's when you're going to know the whole thing was a crock of shit anyways.
Right, exactly.
And ECU fans, we already know that, but
yeah,
that's when you'll really be able to see it.
Well, the fact that they think we're idiots is what's insulting.
Artie, we have some Twitter questions. If you give me a second, let's see. One of them from Brandon Avery, he says, Godwin's contract extension is a no-brainer. He is the man for the job until he no longer wants it, as far as I'm concerned. Could you see ECU basically agreeing to a live contract with him? So Brandon Avery, our good buddy. Once again, too much Jack this weekend. Brandon, I really that's tough. I don't know if I see ECU handing out that type of contract. Kind of like, because, I mean, that's what Coach K has at Duke, basically, life contract. What I see is I see them doing these 5 to 10 year contract extensions until he wants to retire. He's had the opportunity to go somewhere, go to one of these big name schools, Alabama. I think he had a shot at like Michigan or something a couple years ago. He's had job opportunities at big name schools. But he's built something at ECU, and baseball is probably the only sport where being in a power conference doesn't affect you.
Right.
It doesn't help you, nor does
it hurt
you.
You've seen that with Coastal.
Yep, Coastal. You've always got those teams. You got teams that are even barely D1 schools that are making the NCAA tournament. Sam Houston State, Dallas Baptist University, those schools, those aren't your major schools, but they're really good at baseball. UC Irvine has always been good at baseball. So I think that Cliff Godwin realizes what he's got at ECU. He loves the community. He loves the fan base. He loves what Pirate baseball means to the university. He knows what the number 23 means. He excels in really teaching his student athletes about being a Pirate. And I think he enjoys that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I think the situation is good for both sides, right? I mean, ECU is taking care of him, and I think he knows what he has at ECU. I don't see him wanting to leave. He knows that he has something established. He knows that they're knocking right on the cusp of a College World Series appearance. So, you know, I the lifetime contract, you know, that only happens for just a hand. When I say a handful, literally a handful of coaches around the country.
Who has it? Coach K? Basically, Roy Williams has one.
Right.
And then I think
Boeheim.
I was about to say Jim Boeheim had one.
Right.
Gino Auriemma from UConn probably has one.
Right. But see, those are all national champion winners.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the lifetime contract doesn't happen until you actually win a national championship. But even then, I think the situation right now is good for both sides.
I think that the work that Cliff Godwin has done, now don't get me wrong, if he were to go and have four or five seasons in a row of either missing the tournament or not actually succeeding, having a successful season, then they might have to review, okay, what are our options?
Right.
But I don't foresee that happening.
That's not happening.
I don't see that happening.
I'm going to tell you that right now. That's not going to happen.
But that would be the only way that the ECU would get rid of
Cliff Godwin.
Coach Godwin.
Yep.
And then we had another question. I can't find it. It's in our mentions somewhere. I do not see this at all. Let's see here. I'm sorry, guys. I cannot find this this last question. I can't find it. Okay. Well, if we didn't answer your question, I don't know who it was.
Just hit us back.
We'll answer it next week on the podcast. Sorry about that. Artie, I don't have anything else to cover this week. I know kind of a light week.
Yeah.
But football practices will start back this week.
Absolutely.
They'll be able to have the athletes up or athletes with them for somewhere between 12 and 20 hours a day. So they'll really start to get in and start getting their systems in. And then that'll be until about July 28th, making sure that everything's kind of covered. And then they'll start working for game one.
Yep.
They'll start working towards matchups. So, yeah, that's really all I have. We hope y'all enjoyed. Make sure you like us, follow us, and leave us a review. We're on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, all the major ones. And you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, at Boneyard Podcast, and then at Facebook, at the same thing, at Boneyard Podcast. All right, y'all. That's it for episode 18. We hope you enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Stay safe, and until next week, Pirate Nation.
Peace out.